Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I want to start. I have got to pound on this. As much as the Safety Act is somewhat in conjunction with the Safety Act, and this is this Governor Spaulding quote-unquote tax relief package that's being rolled out here 6 weeks, 7 weeks before the election. These income and property tax rebates, his so-called $1.8 billion taxpayer relief plan, in quotation marks, sarcastic quotation marks. $300, up to $300 each in income and property tax rebates to families this year making less than $200,000 individually, $400,000 household. The plan includes the suspension of the 1% sales tax on groceries and a delay in the state's automatic gas tax hike. And this is what's taxpayer relief. As I've summarized before, thousands in permanent tax increases, hundreds in temporary tax relief, and that's called tax relief.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Yes, since he's taken office, the average increase in property taxes is in the thousands. And he's acting like, oh, this is such a big job. I'm giving you $50 back and then $100 per child up until three children. That's it, three dependents.
Permanency in the increases in the thousands. Mm-hmm. Fleeting rebates in the hundreds. And that's what's called tax relief.
You do the math.
And people will buy this? What we're going to see, I suppose. I mean, the gas taxes we've talked about before is particularly noxious. Well, I don't know. They're all particularly noxious. They're all equally noxious. I double your state's gas tax. I temporarily suspend the incremental inflationary adjustment for 6 months, and that's relief at the pump for you.
It's just buying votes. I mean, so they're doing this now, and I said, well, America, you know, Illinoisans have been suffering from inflation, because high gas prices, everything, clothes, groceries. Why not start this 6 months ago? And this was his answer. Are you ready?
It takes some time. The comptroller only just got enough paper. Think about the supply chain issues, in order to be able to issue the checks. And then, of course, you've got to make sure you've got the reserves of $1.2 billion to send out to people when you're sending the checks out.
It's just lies and more damn lies.
The $186 billion in COVID relief funding that made its way to Illinois, that carve out enough to send $100 checks out.
And this is going to take a 6 to 8 week process, which takes us up until election day.
This is a guy who tried and failed to raise income taxes on Illinoisans.
Well, that's right. The fair tax.
And now you believe him when he's providing you an income tax rebate? If you reject the guy's proposal, how is it you don't reject the guy? I mean, it was his seminal proposal because he didn't anticipate all of the funny money the feds would drop ship to Illinois, because this was pre-COVID when he moved to graduate the state's income tax. So that was rejected by a majority of this state. And yet you're going to buy this? You're going to buy this scam? On the grocery tax, 1% sales tax on grocery suspension.
That's a joke.
Lunch meat prices are up 18% year over year. Eggs are 40%. Coffee's 18%. And, you know, and this doesn't even get into energy, which is up 33% natural gas for home utilities. Gasoline is still up 25% year over year. this is helping you make ends meet, Jelly. But hey, I know she,
I got a big press conference, a big rollout for this tax rebates.
And when was
property
the,
taxes, was, child tax credits.
And how much pushback was there? What kind of questions from the press corps? Were there questions like on the topics we're discussing
here?
Oh,
yeah. Tamon Bradley's like, but sir, since you've taken office, property taxes have gone up $2,000. And he just, you know, whittled his way out of it. And then Tamon Bradley said it again, and he whittled his way out of it. Like, this is not a relief. This is not something to celebrate. It's $150. Whip D freaking do. You'll spend that in one visit to the grocery store.
Just a reminder, since property taxes has been invoked, I can't help myself. Illinoisans on average pay almost 2% of their home value in property taxes. Indiana and Kentucky.
How much?
0.77% in Indiana, 0.64% in Kentucky. That on a $300,000 home, that's a tax difference of more than $3,200 Illinoisans pay. And what do you get for it? Please don't say great schools.
No.
Please don't. Please
don't say great, excellent police protection. No, no. Infrastructure. No, 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 no.
Please don't give me that punchline. Please don't. Yeah. The average home price, I mean, and some vary. This is one measurement by Wire Points. Wallet Hub has it even worse, more at like 2.27%. So to put that in real terms, average home price, Illinois, $194,500. So the annual property tax on that would be almost $5,000, which is just basically eliminating your home equity and, well, by your home value. Iowa has a 1.57 property tax rate. $250,000 home there has a tax bill of $3,925 a year.
That'd be nice.
So Iowans spend $200 less on property taxes each month. $200 less would, so $2,400 would be the difference. And so that's not a particularly low property tax state, and it's still $2,400 different on a $250,000 home, Iowa. We could go to all of the border states, and it's the same deal. It's just the same deal, you see. But this, let's look at this. Some other price index on groceries, since groceries has been brought up. Oh, he's helping you, you know, feed your family. Mm-hmm. August, since when he took office, and I understand that Pritzker isn't primarily responsible for inflation, but remember, he's a cheerleader for the administration's policies, and to the extent that he can mimic them at the state level, he is mimicking them. Did you see the crane story yesterday? Did you see this?
What is it?
Chicago region will need out-of-state electricity by decade's end. This is the Anti-Business Business magazine. This is left. The elimination of carbon-emitting power plants in Illinois over the next 20 years will leave the Chicago area without enough generating capacity to meet its needs, forcing the region to import electricity from other states for the first time in modern history. So we're not energy independent, just as Pritzker and his cronies would, starting with Mr. 10%, would like us not to be energy independent internationally. We're not locally, and we're not internationally if the left has their way, and they're having their way, aren't they? And what do you think that's going to do to prices? So when we look at this, when he took office to present, so August of, I mean, you know, 4 years, August of 2018, roughly, August of 2022, gasoline's up 61%. All groceries are up 23%. Meat, fish, and eggs, 27. Milk and dairy, 22. Fruit and vegetables, 23. Cereals and breads, 26. Rent, 20. Natural gas, 74. Used cars, 60%.
My God.
So this is how he's making life in Illinois more affordable and accessible for middle-income families? Is that what we're supposed to believe? You just cannot let him get away with these scams. And all these politicians, and they do it all the time, across the board, all the combined politicians that have come and gone for the last 50 years that have turned Illinois into the worst governed state in American history. For once, can you get hip to the scam? those of you who are already not and already haven't been for a long time, which I know is most of our listening audience. But unfortunately, it's not most of the electorate.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Chris Kepczynski is the CEO of McDonald's. He spoke at the Economic Club of Chicago this week. And, you know, this is, as I've said yesterday and I said before the break, you know, this is a squishy CEO. This is not some, which is most Fortune 500 CEOs, of course. This is not somebody given to rhetorical excess, not bombastic, not political, other than, you know, folding into the zeitgeist of corporate America, like, you know, we're trying to reduce our emissions. You know, we're in the business of hamburgers, but we're trying to reduce cow flatulence or something and our, you know, emissions at our restaurants and so on and so forth. That's the important context to what he had to say before the City Club. And this is the intersection, which perhaps we don't talk about enough. I know people understand this, but let's talk about it in detail, and let's hear from people who are actually living it through hundreds of restaurants around Chicagoland and in Chicago proper. The intersection between the lack of public safety and the lack of economic vitality. If you don't have a safe community, you're not going to have a robust business community. We see that in the neighborhoods that have been left to become shooting galleries for generations, unfortunately. So first, Kepczynski, just, you know, reminding people what's actually happening despite the dismissive attitude of your Pritzkers and your Lightfoots about, say, your Citadels and your Boeings and your major companies leaving.
The fact is that there are fewer large companies headquartered in Chicago this year than last year. There are fewer this month than last month. And everywhere I go, I'm confronted by the same question these days. What's going on in Chicago? While it may wound our civic pride to hear it, there is a general sense out there that our city is in crisis. The truth is, it's more difficult today for me to convince a promising McDonald's executive to relocate to Chicago from one of our other offices than it was just a few years ago. Truth is, it's more difficult for me to recruit a new employee to McDonald's to join us in Chicago than it was in the past.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line, particularly for business owners that perhaps have a footprint outside of Chicago and multiple places for people to be employed with your company or in such a company. Does that sound familiar, what Chris Kepczynski is saying? More difficult to make the case for an executive to come to Chicago, more difficult to make the case for prospective frontline workers to come to Chicago, to relocate to Chicago, to stay in Chicago. sort of all of the above.
To eat at his restaurants in Chicago. I mean, we talked about it yesterday. Look at Rock and Roll, well, formerly the Rock and Roll McDonald's, which had two incidents where predators are sitting there watching little kids, and when they go into the bathroom, they go in and sexually assault them. That's a problem. No one's going to feel safe there.
Well, it's not there as in McDonald's. It's the city.
Right. So, look what Starbucks had to do. They closed 16 stores in, you know, Seattle, L.A., Philly, Oregon, Portland, Oregon, over safety concerns.
Howard Schultz saying much the same thing a few weeks ago when announcing those closures, that one of the big issues driving the decision to close stores in certain urban centers was the safety of his employees. Here's what Kibczynski said about the impact of crime.
It just shows up in so many different ways, and that's the thing about crime. It's not like you can just isolate it to one thing. Crime becomes pervasive in people's psyche, and it affects us. Ultimately, it is holding all of us back from being able to lean in and invest and go drive our business to grow, drive our city.
I think it's difficult to disagree with that. He also talked about trying to get people back to work. You know, you hear a lot of executives, big companies and small to medium companies, too. Boy, trying to get our people back to work is tough, particularly in Chicago. You know why? Because a lot of my workers are in the suburbs. And a lot of my workers in the suburbs are wondering if it's safe to come downtown. And they're using that. I mean, you could say they're using it as an excuse, or they're using it as perhaps an excuse and perhaps a real legitimate concern. I'm going to take public transit to come to the campus, the McDonald's headquarters in West Loop. So they made this move from Oak Brook to West Loop, and now they are having problems getting people back to the office because of safety concerns. I mean, that's explicitly what he said.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line. You could also text us on our text line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Now, he was quick to add, McDonald's commitment to Chicago is there. In fact, he talked about moving 100 jobs from Romeoville, their innovation lab in Romeoville, downtown. So I guess that's good news for the city and less good news for Romeoville. But it's not really, it's just, you know, lateral. That's not growth. But he also said the commitment to Chicago is not corporate altruism. It's not open-ended. It's not unconditional. As a publicly traded company, our shareholders wouldn't tolerate that. And as the Wall Street Journal opined, Chicagoans shouldn't either. Your commitment, open-ended, unconditional, altruistic. Yeah. Our shareholders wouldn't tolerate that. But why do the residents? Something that continues to baffle as people are more concerned about the tone, and of course the press corps is, because they're trying to obfuscate these more important quality of life issues like your personal safety. More concerned about the tone or the shock value of a TV ad that I run than the comments of leading industrialists in the city, the comments from residents throughout the city every single day as you read the police blotter and you are horrified by the details of what's happening.
And they're going to protect NBC5 to the rescue.
And
we don't want you to hear her screaming, although we've played this video a gazillion times on the air.
Well, and by the way, just as a quick tangent.
Yes.
So since NBC5, you know, so when they pulled that Scream ad down, then most of the other network affiliates that had been running it did, too, because, of course, these general managers share a brain. So, of course, they move like a herd. But here's the thing. And then I get moralizing. I get moralizing from like Dana Kozlov at CBS about, did you seek the victim's permission and so on and so forth? You put it in the public domain. The news media put it in the public domain.
Everyone ran that story.
And they used it to satisfy their salacious, if it bleeds, it leads coda. Not to do any public service. For the shock value. Oh, and by the way, for the last week, they took more than $430,000 of my, you know, alleged blood money that they're now distancing themselves from to run the ad. They all approved the ad. It was running. That's how you saw it. And now it's, oh, well, did you get the victim's permission? Did you? Did you ask for, did you find the victim? Did you exercise restraint and say, who is the victim? Let's find the victim. Let's get her permission before we air this on our newscast? Of course not. And frankly, that's not feasible if you want to do timely reporting on crime. I understand that. But then don't come moralizing to me about something you put in the public domain that I connect to the actual policymakers that are responsible for the lawlessness and the endemic violence. That would be Pritzker and Lightfoot and Preckwinkle and Evans and Fox. And then, you know, oh, tisk, tisk. This is what you have from this media, which distorts people's worldview and understanding of what's happening, I'm sorry to say. So I just wanted to make sure they're folded into this conversation because these CEOs don't have the stones to talk about how bad the Chicago press corps is. But of course, I do. Something else that Kaczynski addressed, though, per our conversation before the news about Pritzker's tax relief fraud that he's trying to run, the business climate here. So, yeah, so crime negatively impacts it, and so do the tax and spend policies of Pritzker and Lightfoot.
It has become increasingly difficult to operate a global business out of the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. According to the Nonpartisan Tax Foundation, Illinois now ranks 36th out of 50 states for favorable business tax climate. We also need more investment in infrastructure, both the hard and soft assets that attract new businesses. Better roads, rail, air transport. We need improved schools and a plan to help remediate the learning loss that occurred during COVID. We need to fix the business climate, and that's going to come through partnership, public and private partnership.
Yeah, that's gooey corporate speak. That's where he gets doesn't get it right. He falls back on cliches rather than talking frankly like a human being. You need to make this a more hospitable place to do business. Public-private partnership. I mean, the closest he got to really calling out the power structure is to say, you know, we need a plan that we can get behind. This is a very genteel way of calling them out, but it was calling them out nonetheless, if you can read between the lines. We need a plan to get behind with respect to addressing some of these things that he sees that we all see. And he said, where's the plan? Right. There is no plan. The plan is to live day by day trying to win the news cycle with press release politics. There is no planning going on because you don't have executive leaders in executive positions who think like an executive. Here is a plan. Here's how we're going to implement it. Here's how we're going to measure the effectiveness of the implementation and the conception that we had going in that generated the plan. And we're going to make adjustments on the fly as needed to improve performance. That's going on anywhere in Chicago or Illinois? That sort of serious planning and then serious focus on execution? No, it's throw a press release out saying we're throwing money over here and then throw a press release out saying we're throwing money over there and then throw a press release out saying we just started a program here, all on the front side. It's all on the spend side. There's nothing to measure the impact. And then to the extent that you have some shocking, barbaric crime occur or a big company leave, big company leaves dismissal. What's the impact of Caterpillar and Boeing and Citadel leaving? Was it at Lightfoot was asked? Almost zero. Oh, really? That's the attitude toward three major companies taking a their business and going elsewhere. And this is, again, where he's soft pedaling. We need a culture change around business. We need a partnership. What he means is we need the leadership of the state to be a little bit more concerned about the economic vitality of the state. And that runs through a lot of small businesses, yes, but also the major employers. Of course it does. And you shouldn't give them the back of the hand. I'm not saying cater to any of their rent-seeking desires, but the idea that you're indifferent to their comments about the business climate for their particular business, for the employees they employ, for their customers they serve. I mean, seriously. And do we have none of that. None of that going on here. And again, then when bad things happen, it's dismiss it or find a scapegoat, find a boogeyman to focus people's attention on. You know, and run around crying racism or some other identitarian sin. Tina and Joliet, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. So I had the privilege of watching our tax dollars be completely wasted right in front of my eyes. I had a site walk at a project that we're putting a proposal together for, and it's an old, old building on the south side. That is going to be completely demoed interior. They're just keeping the facade. Nothing is staying. But while we're out there getting all this information, brand new windows were being installed in this four-story, 500,000-square-foot building. And they'll all have to be removed and demolished. And as soon as the new owner picks up this building, it was such a blatant disregard for public money. City owns the building. It's not being used. It is a it's a World War II era building that they pumped $80 million into 10 years ago. And in talking with the neighborhood do-gooder who is very involved in the project, of course she doesn't want to see any kind of gentrification in the neighborhood because
She'd rather have white elephants in the neighborhood that are expensive,
exactly.
And then throw people over there to do, you know, some work to keep the right people busy and the money flowing. You know, you got to keep spending to prevent from going bankrupt, as Mr. 10%, the president once said.
And the sad thing is, as you know, myself and some of the other developers who are walking there, somebody posed the question privately: do you think Lightfoot will get reelected? And we all said yes. She probably will.
Yeah. Thanks for the call.
I don't know if there's a political will.
Thanks for the call, Tina. Mike Plano.
Yeah, anytime a corporate CEO mentions public-private partnership, they immediately lose me because I saw what that did in 2020 when Trump signed the Defense Production Act. But one thing about these guys is I get tired of them constantly complaining because, first of all, these corporations, they've been spending the last several decades indoctrinating their employees and the communities that they reside in with leftist indoctrination. And it was subtle. Not everybody knew what sensitivity training was and understood that that was leftist indoctrination. But, you know, once 2020 came, they decided to throw down hard with the left, and they embraced the far-left policies, which increased crime and hurt the business climate. So, as much, you know, my big question for some of these conservatives, not you guys, but others that complain about this, is why should I care about the complaining of corporate America? You know, I get Steve Moore and some of these guys will say, oh, it hurts the economy, blah, 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 or it hurts businesses. So what? I mean, these people made their decisions, let them fall on their face.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Michael. Look, I get that, but here's the thing. You want Chicago and Chicagoland and everywhere to be safe. You don't want people being victimized by predators. And so, you know, this is where, and this is what politics is, building coalitions. And it may be a coalition that only comes together for this issue and for maybe some of the economic policy issues that Kibczynski mentioned. And then we're going to have to fight them every step of the way when it comes to the identitarian politics that is part of their corporate culture and part of corporate America's culture generally. But when there's an opportunity to enlist people that are influential and represent, you know, hundreds of business owners in terms of franchisees, represent tens of thousands of employees, you don't want to be dismissive of that. I don't want to be. So you enlist them for the productive things you can do together. And you try to get them to be more productive on some of the things where they're not being productive, like identitarian politics. At least that would be my approach. But, you know, we got Lightfoot and Pritzker and Preckwinkle and Evans and Fox, you know, to handle this area. And all of those, you know, I mean, again, this is not like a rallying to the defense, so genuflecting before the economic club and these CEOs who are mostly cowards, generally speaking, and their silence and their lethargy to the fight is part of how the city has spiraled out of control. So I'm not absolving them of anything. I'm not genuflecting before them, but I will be happy to enlist them when they're making sense and they're willing to stand up and be counted on particular issues of importance like public safety.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Oh, my goodness. Martha's Vineyard is all upside down after the arrival of two planes full of migrants, courtesy of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. I like Babylon Bee was on the job, and I like some of the stories that they posted. Just give you a little bit of flavor on what was happening.
Oh, please, let me know.
Martha's Vineyard resident calls police to report a Hispanic in the neighborhood not operating a leaf blower. You know, the Obamas have a joint on Martha's Vineyard.
I've got a family that lives there. It's beautiful. Manicured lawns, palatial estates. It's like walking into a movie, you know, a set of a movie. It's
Valerie
beautiful.
Jarrett must have been hiding under the table there. Babylon Bee also, again, beat reporters out there at Martha's Vineyard looking for stories. Apparently, this is occurring. Babylon Bee reporting. Obamas construct new cages at Martha's Vineyard to hold arriving migrants. Okay, so that's parody.
That's some good stuff.
This is not parody. This is some Mia Farrow impersonator who lives on Martha's Vineyard who, hey.
What?
You know, we're all for sanctuary cities and communities and states, but, I mean, not here. You know, we just don't have the room.
So what are the most difficult challenges right now?
The difficult challenges are... at some point in time, they have to move to somewhere else, right? We don't have the services to take care of 50 immigrants, and we certainly don't have housing. We're in a housing crisis as we are on this island, and so we can't house everyone here that lives here and works here. We don't have housing for 50 more people.
Have you heard about the housing crisis in Martha's Vineyard? Don't you feel for those folks?
The housing prices are so high right now, we can't. I mean, but these are such progressive liberals who, we welcome everybody and everybody should come in. You know, we're not going to close the borders. It's fine. But now it's in their backyard and they're freaking out. And I love it.
What? Open borders, open doors. What do you mean?
Yeah,
what do you need government services for? 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line 64636 DA Turnkey.pro text line. Your 14-room beach house doesn't have enough space to... house a few of these migrants seeking a better life in America? What's the problem?
Oh, and then, you know, the liberals are saying, oh, they're being used as pawns. And no, we're all in this together, right? #all in. Step up. Do your part. Why should Texas bear the brunt of all of this? And I said that to Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker. That you're complaining about 500. They're getting 5,000 today. And guess what? 8,000 tomorrow. And it's not going to stop. So spread the pain. You know, that's what we got to do. And DeSantis was, you know, talking about it because he's the one who orchestrated this.
We will help facilitate that transport for you to be able to go to greener pastures.
Greener pastures. That's what he did. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Kamala Harris tackled the issue of border security in that wide-ranging interview she gave to that yapping terrier who hosts Meet the Press, Chuck Todd, over the weekend. And here's what she said as a reminder. And then here's what a migrant who was bused to Washington, D.C., right outside her home, dropped off right outside her home, had to say. So see if you can pick up on any difference of opinion on whether or not we have an open border at present.
We're going to have 2 million people cross this border for the first time ever. You're confident this border is secure?
We have a secure border in that that is a priority for any nation, including ours and our administration.
And Vice President Harris said that the border is closed. Is the border closed? Do you believe that the border is closed or is it open?
It's open, not closed. The border is open.
The border is open. Do you believe that all the migrants believe that the border is open?
Yeah, everybody believes that the border is open. It's open because we enter. We come in free.
Yeah.
And they know what's going on. And they're happy to get on buses, the luxury charter buses to go places, because they sign a piece of paper, they tell them where they're going to go, and then they take them there.
Can we just get a baseline here? The border's secure or is it open? So should they say it's secure? We know that's not the case, but it's always fun to hear from the actual involved parties and hear him say, hear that gentleman say, yeah, everybody knows it's open. You know how we know? Because we're standing here. That's how we know. So don't believe your lying eyes, Americans, according to Kamala and KJP and the whole crew. Don't believe your lying eyes. Believe their rhetoric. Oh, okay. Sure. Keith in Oostburg, Wisconsin.
I think they need to open up some low-income housing in the Vineyard with some drug shooting up rooms so it'd be safe for them also.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, it's a real housing crisis there in Martha's Vineyard. They just don't have room at the inn. I'll leave these wonderful enlightened leftists that have these palatial estates in Martha's Vineyard. And that's sort of what DeSantis picked up on yesterday when he was pushed on his decision to offer flight arrangements for migrants to Martha's.
We are not a sanctuary state. And it's better to be able to go to a sanctuary jurisdiction. And yes, we will help facilitate that transport for you to be able to go to greener pastures. Biden would fly people in the middle of the night, dump them all across this country. There was no warning on any of this. And all those people in D.C. and New York were beating their chests when Trump was president, saying they were so proud to be sanctuary jurisdictions, saying how bad it was to have a secure border. The minute even a small fraction of what those border towns deal with every day is brought to their front door, they all of a sudden go berserk, and they're so upset that this is happening. And it just shows you, you know, their virtue signaling is a fraud, okay?
That's about right. Their virtue signaling is a fraud. It is a fraud. And it's a fraud that is being imposed on the residents of just about every major city in this country, except for those that are in red states that may at least not have state support over the top for the kind of lawlessness they engender locally.
And did people forget that Governor Pritzker accused Greg Abbott of human trafficking and kidnapping? That just flew over the plate. Nobody questioned that because he said he's investigating. They're actually spending time and resources investigating, interviewing people to see if they're, you know, taken against their will.
Just another misdirection play.
Yeah.
If you oppose the Safety Act, you're a racist, you're a fearmonger. if you oppose sanctuary state, you're the human trafficker, or if you actually embrace sanctuary state, you're facilitating open borders, which they do. That's the whole point. Then you're facilitating human traffickers. So it's just another tired example of the projection. Kathy and Joliet, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. You know, this is just such a travesty all the way around. You're dealing with hypocrites, and, you know, they're in their backyard. Okay, now, how about all the illegals that you've got cleaning your houses up at Martha's Vineyard and blowing your, grass around and cutting the bushes and all that? If anybody did an investigation on that, they would find there's plenty of illegals already there, and they're housing them, they're feeding them, they're doing whatever. And on a second note, I just flew into Midway, and there's a beautiful giant poster of our mayor, who is very light-skinned, by the way, and she does not quite have the same eye contour as she does in real life. So all this complaining she's doing about you doctoring up her skin color and all that crap.
Did they doctor her skin at Midway for the mural? Is that right?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's much lighter.
Oh, boy.
It's much lighter. You ought to take a trip.
Oh,
right
boy.
When you get off the planes and start walking up the aisle on your way to pick up baggage. Yeah, I looked at a nice, I bust out laughing, and my daughter's like, what are you laughing for? I go, you wouldn't get it. I said, because she's not as connected as I am to the politics or to you and Amy, you know. I mean, and I kind of explained it to her, and she's like, oh, Mom, that's so petty. And I go, yeah, no kidding.
Well,
they Photoshop her eyes, too.
Thanks for the call, Kathy. Well, pettiness begets pettiness, doesn't it? Yeah, that's an artist's rendering. That's an interpretation of the essence of Lightfoot or some such thing. But it's just kind of fun.
See. It's similar when you drive into O'Hare Airport.
New York, you know, this is just like here with this, we're overwhelmed. Just like Martha's Vineyard, we simply don't have
the resources,
the infrastructure. We just can't. Oh, we're just, heavens, somebody get the fainting couch and my pearls, please. Yes. New York, Eric Adams, who's been bitching up a storm, he is calling on New York to reassess its right to shelter law.
What's that?
He wrote this about, because there's a host of services that have been provided to 11,000 people, predominantly from Central and South America, seeking a better life. In this new and unforeseen reality where we expect thousands more to arrive every week going forward, the city's system is near its breaking point. As a result, the city's prior practices, which never contemplated the busing of thousands of people into New York City, must be reassessed. Really? A city of 8.4 million people is at its breaking point and all the resources with 11,000 in. And here's something that's interesting. Just a little bit of comparison contrast from of this era to a bygone era. Do you know that Ellis Island averaged 1,900 immigrants a day emigrating to this country? 1,900 a day. He's got 11,000 over the course of a couple few weeks. 1,900 a day. From 1892 to 1954, for 62 years.
Wow.
For 62 years, 1,900 immigrants a day moved through Ellis Island. And it's wonderful because we have this great country with people from all over the world doing all kinds of amazing things because of it. But now, a couple of hundred overwhelm Chicago. A few thousand in a city of 8.5 million overwhelms New York. 50 people, one of the richest enclaves in the Western world, overwhelms Martha's Vineyard.
Well, we have 500 here, maybe now 550.
Whatever.
He's calling out 75 Illinois National Guard troops.
The big difference is, coming to Ellis Island, you were coming for a better life and you were ready to work and struggle to get it. Now it's all about we have to provide all these wraparound services and so on and so forth. And I'm not even saying that those trying to migrate to migrate or attempting to migrate to this country, emigrate into this country, even want all the welfare state benefits. In point of fact, I've said for eons, you want to expedite the process to legal status and citizenship, then as a condition of entry and and a condition of being enjoying this expedited benefit, sign away all welfare state benefits. See how many sign. Is that inhumane or is that threshold clearing? Is that putting what people are saying to the test? Just like you have Governors DeSantis and Abbott putting these sanctuary state and city politicians to the test. Make people back up their rhetoric. How about that for a change, as opposed to this empty, fraudulent virtue signaling? Ed and Glen Ellen.
Dan, I'm wondering if you can help me out. I'm trying to figure out how I can load up the family truckster with the family and take advantage of some of these free hotels and amenities in all these other states. Uh-huh. Sounds like something the American citizen should be able to take part of, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, call
free
that.
Living for 90 days.
Chris in Lamont.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Your previous caller that said about the poster of the mayor, I came back from Atlanta last week, and I saw the same poster, and I was like, my God, they really airbrushed her beautifully.
Yeah.
Have a good day, guys.
You were impressed, yeah. Thanks for the call.
All right, yeah. I got a picture. Here it is. This is the same one that's if you go to the rental car place at O'Hare, that same picture's up. I mean, it's a little, I don't know. I don't think they photoshopped anything with her eyes, but it's, what do you think, Dan?
I think she looks fetching with the family pearls on. Vince in Crete. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dan and Amy. Good morning. Thanks for fighting a good fight for us all. You ever wonder why big labor is not opposed to the illegal immigration? Well, I had a conversation with a cement finisher VA one time. He told me that he had a guy working about 15 years in the system, paying into his dues. The employer's paying into his dues, all the bennies. And the guy finally became a citizen, got a legal Social Security number, and went up to the VA and said, hey, guess what? Transfer my numbers over, transfer all my money over, because I'm a citizen now. And the finisher BA said, sorry, bud, you're starting at zero. So all that money just disappeared, went away, went to whatever. So I think that's why they're not opposing it. And it also goes for Social Security. I think that's why politicians of both sides are getting the money in. These people are paying into the benefits and are never going to reap a penny of the rewards.
Mm. Thanks for the call, Vince. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that in terms of welfare state expenditures versus resources extracted from their work product for the state. And in addition to that, I'm not sure that's the primary motivation. I think the primary motivation of the left for open borders is more state dependence, because they're going to offer them this fool's gold of welfare state benefits. That's what they're doing. That's what they're all talking about. We can't offer them all the benefits we want to offer them. Not opportunity. That we want them to be wards of the state, because you know what a ward of the state is? A reliable Democrat voter.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Tickets are on sale now for Freedom Summit 2022. Get yours today at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Twilio is a big tech company in San Fran, headquartered in San Fran. Its woke CEO, Jeff Lawson, announced that Twilio is cutting 11% of its headcount, its employees. But they're doing so in a way...
What? This equitable...
Yes.
Oh, really?
That is anti-racist, which means racist, counting by race. Anti-racist, counting by race. Racist. Layoffs like this can have a more pronounced impact on marginalized communities, so we're particularly focused on ensuring our layoffs were carried out through an anti-racist, anti-oppression lens. I guess that means they're prioritizing the honkies to lay off, which is, you know, fine, whatever. If you lay off people or hire people based on race, then that's just going to redound to the detriment to your business. So that's good news for your competitors if you're basing your hiring or firing not on talent, ability, work product, but on race. So go ahead. But the more important issue than the silliness of these billionaire CEOs, these dilettantes that can afford to be so ignorant, is the underlying 11% of his workforce is being laid off. And we've seen announcements at layoffs at other big companies mentioned earlier in the week, Goldman Sachs and others. So we're starting to see what many predicted would happen when things started tightening up in the credit markets because of interest rate increases, that we would see unemployment follow and move into the glorious days of green stagflation. Is that what's happening? To help us with that question, we're pleased to be joined again by our friend Scott the Cow Guy Shelody, market specialist for Market Day Report, 10:30 Chicago time. And he's also got the Cow Guy Close. That's at 1 p.m. Central time on RFD TV. Scott the Cow Guy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. So what about these high-profile layoff announcements?
Well, I mean, you said ignorant. I think we've moved beyond ignorance with these high-profile CEOs that are just trying to distract. I mean, they're a bunch of wimps. They just need to man up and say we need to fire a bunch of people, and here's what it is, instead of following it up with some woke narrative that moves beyond ignorance to almost willfully being punitive for some reason. It's just and the whole world. I don't know how these CEOs do it. I don't know how the press secretary, KJP, whatever her name is, does it. They're looking into the lens, and absolutely, it's beyond ignorant. It's intentional. They're intentionally punishing us, and I just don't know why. But this is what we live in with the economy. I mean, we are so focused on the demand side, and I try to make this clear on my show. A lot of folks don't know. When we talk about the demand, we talk about the Federal Reserve. They can shut off demand by raising interest rates and killing the economy so that there's no more demand. The other side of the equation, which is the administration, is something we call supply. That's supply and demand, right? And the supply side, no one ever talks about, but that would be much easier than raising interest rates. And the supply side has put more things out there, like oil, like natural gas, like anything fossil fuel related, to help with this inflationary cycle that we're in now, which seems to be with us. It's going to be with us. It seems to be a lot longer than everybody thought. But nobody talks about the supply side, what the government can do. They only talk about what the Fed can do. The Fed's only doing what it can do.
Well, because this regime under Mr. 10% doesn't want to do what the federal government can do in terms of cutting taxes and reducing regulations. So that, then you have to go back to the demand side.
I mean, they look into the camera and you know that they're absolutely not telling the truth, and it's on purpose. It's not because they're stupid or ignorant. They're destroying our country and our economy. It's willfully, and no one's really calling it out. I'm getting sick and tired of it because why are these governors in trouble for putting the problem on the doorstep of these people that say that they can handle it? When the government's been doing that all along, flying people in the in the dead of night to places around the country. I mean, you cannot make it up. And because you can't make it up, look, the laws of nature would have you get something right once in a while. They haven't got anything right.
And this is like
anything right, anything.
Ripped from the Democratic playbook. First, Governor Pritzker. Now, this morning, Gavin Newsom is asking the Department of Justice to look into kidnapping charges against DeSantis and Greg Abbott from Texas.
All right. Well, they have to investigate. They have to investigate themselves first, then, because they've done it before Abbott and DeSantis did it. They flew these migrants into small places in Tennessee, here where I'm at, or upstate New York. They did it before DeSantis and Abbott did it. So that's why they can look in the camera and say that, knowing full well that this is an absolute crock. They're willfully destroying the country. It's not just a mistake.
We apparently avoided a rail strike, which is good news, particularly for agribusiness. But speaking of that, what about you mentioned inflation is going to be with us a lot longer than anticipated, and you know all the media attention is on the top line CPI and PPI, but underneath it, when you start to look at grocery prices, that's where people are going to. People are really feeling it now. I mean, you see double-digit year-over-year increases in the prices of food staples.
If you had economics 101 in third grade, you would be raising the red flag of we are in big trouble and running around the White House lawn right now, because when you have oil come off as much as it's come off and gasoline at the pump come off as much as it's come off, and you can only get a break of, 0.2% on CPI, we're in trouble. That means that other things, eggs up 40%. I mean, just regular groceries up 11.5%, 12%.
Right.
And I think that's even higher than that. But I mean, so if you've got the biggest break of all time in the oil market, and you can only buy, that only buys you 0.2%. That's why the stock market's down, because they're realizing like, we're starting to talk about entrenched inflation, not transitory. We've gone 180 degrees and no one's talking about it. And now on top of that, the American consumer is getting used to paying those prices.
Well, some are getting more used to it than others, because some are right. Feeling it a lot more than others. Of course, you go down income, these things consume more of your income than if you go to the upper reaches. Lower and middle income families are feeling it the most, and they're largely those that aren't, whose opinions or plight is not of particular interest to the press corps.
No, well, of course not. And I, once again, it all comes back to the same thing for me. These are the people that they say that they represent the most. This is what they're there to help. These are the people that they're there to help the most. And all they've done is squash them. Middle America, they just stamped on the neck. They've hurt businesses. I mean, look at what they've done to small businesses in America. I mean, it's just one thing after another. And you know what? It started with, they didn't have to raise wages to $15 an hour. They just had to pay people to stay home $18 an hour. And then all of a sudden, if you have a small business, you got to pay people at least what they're making to stay home. So the government can say, we didn't raise it, wages. That was business that did that. Well, yeah, because you were in competition with small business. I mean, it's one thing after another. And Inflation Reduction Act, you can't. It's not even a joke anymore. It's disgusting.
Well, let's talk
and
about.
I don't know who. I don't believe it. Go ahead.
No. Well, I want to talk about mortgage rates and how it's affecting the housing market.
Well, I mean, they went over 6% a couple days ago. That's absolutely going to, I wouldn't be surprised to see housing come off 30%. Maybe, the only thing that's different between this time and last time, 2008 being the last time, is that we do generally have a shortage of dwellings. And so you might find, and I think it's already manifesting itself, that nobody's going to want to buy a house because you think it's going to be worth less tomorrow. So you go out and rent. And so rents, look at rents in New York, they've gone through the roof. And so, I'm sure there'll be some more calls for rent controls. And every time the government gets involved with supply and demand, they make it just more expensive. And so we're going to see housing come off. When you shut off the spigot of capital, which has been one of the biggest spigots of capital of all time, we were buying. We were keeping interest rates low all last year, all of 2021, to the tune, it was costing the government, they had to purchase $40 billion of bonds every month. So that's $500 billion for the year to keep interest rates low to help the housing market. But the housing market was up 23% year over year. I mean, it wasn't even like it was even down. But they continued to do it, the administration, the Fed continued to buy bonds to keep interest rates low to help the housing market, which was up 22 to 23%. That's insane.
But
so I everywhere you turn, it's like a fun house. It's like we're at Coney Island all day long.
the with respect to housing, it seems to me, because of what you mentioned, that there's a genuine shortage that there are places where the demand has not subsided, and so prices, you know, frankly in wealthier areas, I don't see necessarily coming off in places that are otherwise, you know, hospitable from a property tax perspective.
No, I mean, there's going to be any place next to Illinois and California will probably do well. I mean, because everybody's going to be jumping out of those places with their hair on fire. Mm-hmm. So I know that, you know, as prices do drift lower, Indiana's going to benefit from that. I mean, I know, you know, Arizona, things have come off a little bit, but still there's people from in California just waiting to purchase things. So there are places that aren't coming off as much. But, you know, when you had, I can tell you right now, like in Nashville, January of this year, if a house was listed for $500,000, very often it would trade for $625,000, right. $125,000 over.
Right.
But then that house today, that house has been put. So these are in places that, you know, they build six different types of models, right? And so you go back to those neighborhoods that was happening in today. That same house now, a different one, or, you know, around the corner, but the same looking house is listed for $500,000 and trades at $475,000. And so now whoever bought this, whoever paid $625,000 is about $150,000 in 6 months.
That's interesting. I have to check some of these other markets like Southwest Florida, which is of particular interest for me. But but I digress. Hey, so Ray Dalio, who I'm not necessarily a big fan of, so I'm not invoking him as some oracle.
I'm 50-50.
Yeah, that's about where I'm at. So, but he says, look, if what you're talking about is inflation gets entrenched and Jay Powell continues his commitment to be the inflation buster, and you get interest rates at, say, 4.5%, then the market comes off another 20-25%. Do you sort of agree with that assessment?
We're already off like 15-20%, depending on what you're looking at. So
no, he's saying in addition to where we're at now.
I know, that's what I'm saying. No, I'm not in that camp. I think we can come lower, but not that much. I mean, if we get up to 4, 4.5, I've been talking about this, you know, for the last 2 weeks. You know, this economy is already slowing dramatically, if you ask me, and we're going to get more of that as time goes on. The Fed will probably have to start cutting rates, or at least stop what they're doing early next year, maybe middle of next year. You can see rate cuts because the Fed's going to overshoot. They always do. And things I think we're going to get a wave of job losses. And we've already started to see that. They're just not manifesting themselves as quickly as I thought, but they're absolutely coming. And I think that's when the Fed's going to have their feet held to the fire with some losses in the stock market. But, you know, you can see it come off another 5-10%, and they're going to cry uncle and stop what they're doing.
And just so we have updated lexicon. How many quarters in a row of negative growth are now required for a recession to be invoked?
We're in a recession.
Okay.
We had two negative quarters already, which is the definition, the long-held definition that even the administration used to, you know, talk about. We have a Fed tracker GDP now thing where the Atlanta Fed comes out and says what they think the third quarter GDP is going to be. It started about, I don't know how long ago, 6 or 7 weeks ago, at a 2.5% growth rate for the third quarter. With what we've seen happen over the last 3 weeks, it's been drastically cut to 0.5% right now. And I that could very well even go lower. So that would be our third quarter in a row of negative growth. So, you know, these people run and look at the jobs numbers, jolts the job openings. Apparently, we've got 11 million. I'm not quite sure how they come up with that number. I don't see it. But I do know that between the age of 25 and 45, the jobs aren't as plentiful as everybody likes to tell everybody. And so we're in trouble. The ground is shaking, credit's drying up, interest rates are going over 6% for trying to buy a house. I mean, there's no good news. Now we have people talking about shutting down the economy again for the climate change.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Oh, it gets crazy. Yeah.
Nothing
rolling
like
shutdowns for climate change.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't even laugh. If you don't laugh, you cry.
All right. Well, no crying. No crying on Morning Drive. Yeah, there's no crying on Morning Drive Radio. Scott the Cow Guy Shelley, market specialist for Market Day Report, 10:30 Chicago time. And the Cow Guy closed 1 p.m. Chicago time, both at RFD TV. Scott, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Have a good weekend.
Thanks. You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Kim Fox is expected to announce felony charges against a Chicago police sergeant and Chicago police officer for a shooting that happened in Pilsen in July. You've heard Mike Scott reporting on it. This is interesting because I recall the shooting that occurred, and I recalled that Superintendent David Brown rallied to the defense of the police officers that were involved in the shooting.
Oh, yeah. It was a graphic reminder about the dangers of the job.
This incident is a stark reminder of the dangers officers face each and every day at any given moment.
And he explained to reporters what happened.
When they were seated in the car, they get out of the car and they run toward a person shooting at them, trying to kill them.
Well, and luckily, we'll take a step back and set the scene. They are in their car, and they see four masked men outside a closed business.
Right, in the 1000 block of West 18th Street. And they said the officers, they were assigned to the Major Accidents Investigation Unit. They were driving to the academy for police training when they saw these four people wearing masks. They were loitering in front of a closed business. And one of the masked individuals displayed a gun. Then there was an exchange of gunfire, police said. No officers were injured. Two men were shot, including an apparent innocent bystander who was grazed in the leg. And one of the witnesses who saw this quote-unquote innocent bystander grazed in the leg claims that this is somehow a form of police brutality. What happened?
He was asking for help. He's like, help me, help me. I'm right here, man. This is what y'all do, officer. This is what y'all do. I don't have nothing on me. I'm right here, man. And he just had his little hands up in the air.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA. Just so you know, the one gunman who was firing at police officers fled the scene and has yet to be arrested.
I don't understand the charges. So the forthcoming felony charges, if the reporting is correct. So the eyewitness says, at first I thought it was gang-related, but no, he was by himself. I didn't see anyone waving a gun. He was asking for help. He's like, help me, help me. This is what y'all do, officer, you just sort of say. So because an ostensibly innocent bystander was grazed in the leg, that means that it was a bad shoot when you have an assailant that allegedly opened fire on police and they responded by firing back in the direction of the person that opened fire on them?
It makes no sense. And last night, these two, the sergeant and the police officer, were relieved of their official duties. But how do you go from supporting them? I mean, did Kim Fox even interview or talk to David Brown? You know, how do you go from that to them losing their jobs? And now they might face felony charges today?
Well, they're going to, according to the reporter.
Yeah, there's a 10:30 a.m. press conference where she's going to announce the charges against police. So who's got police officers' backs? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also reach us on our text line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Well, this is very interesting because this sounds like, and again, we don't have all the details and all the results of this, the investigation that was done. The COPA, the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, opened an investigation. They were placed on administrative duties for 30 days. They said that COPA said yesterday their investigation is still ongoing.
Right.
And they remind the public they have 60 days to release the materials from the incident. So that 60 days is up on Tuesday. So the COPA investigation is ongoing, but she's filing felony charges against them today.
It's part of her political agenda to defund police. I feel like she does not have police officers' backs. She cares more about the criminals and the victims and about supporting police.
So, you know, this sounds like, again, pending all of the details, and if the story as we understand it, as David Brown communicated it to us back in July, is correct, this sounds like the Safety Act in action, even though it's not effective state law yet. You know, it's been effective de facto in Cook County because this is the approach that Cook County officials take, starting with Kim Fox and including Tony Preckwinkle, including Tim Evans, including Governor Pritzker. So, you know, it's not just about prosecutors being forced to open the jail cells and release violent criminals, those who've been alleged to have committed violent crimes. It's also with respect to the rules of engagement for police. That's part of the Safety Act, too. And it puts police on their heels. So police, I mean, for example, when it comes to pursuit, when it comes to the use of force, it's very much like what prosecutors have to argue if they want somebody detained for a non-detainable offense, which is that this person poses a specific threat to a specific person. So for police, say you have somebody opens fire and they have a gun.
Right.
And then they're running towards a school. Do they pose a specific threat to a specific individual, or do they pose a general threat to public safety, a school, a neighborhood, a business district? If it's a general threat to public safety, a reading of the Safety Act says you are not allowed to use deadly force. You may not even be allowed to pursue. You have to sort of wait until the criminal gets tired and see if you can't come by and pick him up later somewhere. I mean, I'm serious. These are the discussions right now that police officers, police chiefs, sheriffs, prosecutors are trying to have as they discern what the world is going to look like on January 1 if nothing is done.
This just seems egregious to me. I mean, I know more information is going to come out at 10:30, but...
I think the thing here is, number one, the COPE investigation's not done, so right. Why can't you wait till Tuesday?
Thank you.
Number two, you have David Brown characterizing what happened back in July, so it's not like we're reading tea leaves here. This is based on what he understands from, you know, being the police chief.
And talking to the officers.
And it'd be interesting to hear what David Brown has to say about these charges that are forthcoming this morning. Jim, Southside.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'm a retired Chicago police sergeant, and I worked in the 12th district, but I don't understand if it was an accidental shooting where somebody got shot during the exchange of gunfire, how they could go with felony charges, but we don't know all the facts of the case. The problem is that the way that the powers that be, in my opinion, are looking at all this, the only bad guys with guns on the street are the police and the people who have a concealed carry or FOID card. It's like they're coming after the wrong group of individuals. People who are convicted felons who are carrying weapons and are not supposed to be carrying weapons, they're getting their IBON and they're getting their home monitoring device because this is what you're looking at it. It's not fair to have a punitive bail system is what their opinion is. So I don't understand what their end goal is, because what's really happening is the minority communities are the ones suffering the most under letting everybody back out of jail with more and more violent crimes coming into their neighborhoods. And it's just blossoming out into the whole city. And it's going to be the whole state, because J.B. Pritzker, I'm sure, is going to win with this next election. Because
don't be so sure.
Right. I don't think this guy's going to snowball chance in hell. I hope he does. But again,
don't concede yet. Don't be so fatalistic. Yeah.
Well, okay. But the problem is that they've turned everything upside down, where the only bad guys are the police, and they're the ones who are out there. Like they wanted to get involved in the shooting, going to training at the police academy. It's a free day for them to go to work. They don't want, you know, hey, just let them drive by. And if those guys with the mask shoot somebody, well, you know what?
Not my fault.
We want to go to training.
Yeah, we didn't, right.
Look the other way.
Well, thanks for the call, Jim. Well, yeah, that's just it, is right. It's to say, you know, that what does this tell cops is, hey, you know, don't get involved.
Yeah. Don't, I mean, no, don't do your job. Stand down. Police.
If I don't get involved, they can't do anything to me. If I get involved, then it's risky.
I mean, they could go to jail. They could lose their pensions. They just lost their jobs. Relieved of official police duties. Oh.
So are we going to replace to protect and serve with to stand idly by? And this is not a shot at police. This is a shot at those who have authority over the police.
This makes me sick.
Ignacio, Spring Grove.
Hey, this is all tied into what we're all calling 106 days till the purge starts in Illinois. And this is exactly it, because if they can't chase them and they can't do anything to them, what was it, 2 days ago they had the article about jugging going on here now where the police are literally standing there while people are dressed as parking attendants. But think about it. If they go after them, all they got to do is run. So this whole system, to me, guys, and I want your opinion on this, I believe it's intentional. I believe it's there to cause chaos.
Oh, thanks for the call.
It is causing chaos.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's counterintuitive, but as I've said before, the worse those people in charge make it, Pritzker on down, the power structure, the worse they make it, the better it gets for them, because who's left? And, you know, the better it gets for them, I'm just speaking politically, because that's all they care about is their political sinecure, their perch, their power. Tom, Blue Island.
Hey, Dan and Amy, it's hard to argue that this is an open promotion of anarchy. And Dan, one of the adages you always use is you get the government you get. And if Darren Bailey doesn't pound this every day until the election, every single day, nothing else except this safety act, and then he loses, well, then there really is nothing that can be done. And then it'll be really open and obvious it's time to run. There's a billboard on the south side out here that has Ella French on it. And it says it's a big police billboard, and it says sacrifice. And every time I drive by it, I think there should be a D on the end of that word.
Sacrifice.
You guys have a good day.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Tom. Or Ella Fitzgerald, as Lightfoot calls her. Brian Warner, former CPD. Brian.
Good morning, guys. My first thought is it's strictly political. Kim Fox is going to use this as a feather in her cap. I remember the last time she was running for election, she was putting out campaign brochures that had the amount of police officers that her department, her office indicted. So she's just looking at this again. Whether these guys can convict it, I don't know what the hell they're going to convict them on. Technically, Dan, you know the law. If the person who opens fire first, the bad guy, should be charged with that innocent person being shot.
You know what?
He should be charged with the felony instead of the police officer.
You know what? I bet she's going to argue. This is just supposition. I don't know. It's a guess. She's going to argue that even if he opened fire, they had turned and run, so there was no longer a reasonable threat for life and safety, and so the discharge of the weapon was felonious. That's what she's going to argue,
right.
I guess.
I would hope a jury, or they should ask for a bench trial, because a judge would say that's BS, because when you're in the heat of the battle and making a literally split-second decision, you cannot force somebody or expect somebody to make that decision. The crappy part is, like Amy was describing, these poor guys are now without pay, have families. I'm sure their kids are in private school, because who would send their kid to a public school in the city? And now they're, you know, without income.
Amy would.
Pardon me?
Amy would send her kid to a public school in the city. I know, but that's about it. You're right.
And they'll drag this out. You know, they'll get continuation after continuation. They'll drag it out. It'll be a 2-day trial, hopefully a bench trial, and the judge will find them not guilty. But these guys will never get their reputations back, and they'll be without pay for 2 years. Like I said, they're discouraging any police officer from taking reasonable action. If they turn their back and they kill somebody, there'll be a speed camera catching them, and they'll get them for dereliction of duty. So they're damned if they do, and they're damned if they don't.
Thanks for the call, Brian.
We want the police officers.
Thanks for the call, Brian. Appreciate it. Yeah, I wouldn't be so optimistic necessarily about a bench trial with some of those circuit court judges, but okay.
36 Chicago police officers have been shot or shot at so far this year.
Mm-hmm. Drago on Lakeshore Drive. I loved you in Rocky.
Well, I would like to have somebody ask Team Fox today, what is the difference between this case and a case some time ago when we had the two gangs shooting at one another, and she decided she didn't want to prosecute anybody.
Yeah, they're mutual combatants, remember?
Right.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no difference. And this woman is
She's
idiot.
Evil.
She needs to go. She needs to go.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Well, I mean, obviously the big difference is, right, that you have police officers returning fire after somebody shot at them. So law enforcement trumps mutual combatants, I mean, at least in a civilized world, but that's not Cook County under these people we've chosen to lead us, is it? Candace in Mount Pleasant.
Oh, Candace.
Hi. I'm watching you guys lie, which is so funny. anyway, what the police are policy enforcers, and it drives me crazy that all the left is doing now is covering for their policies, which have been enacted for years and years. And, I mean, that's all the police are doing. And they're throwing the police under the bus, but all they are policy enforcers. And I'm shocked that more police unions, sadly, they're all hacks of the Democrat Party, are not pointing this out.
Thanks for the call, Candace. Maurice in Berwyn.
Hi, Dan. But I want people to understand, minorities also aren't walking around saying, yay, more criminals walking around the South and West Side.
No kidding.
Right. But somewhere in here is intention versus outcome. The intention was like to be treated fairly, but as usual, as a Democrat, conservative Democrat, which nowadays makes me almost a Republican.
Yeah.
But that's a whole different conversation. It got befuddled. They dropped the ball on it. And that's the issue. Is the goal is to be treated fairly, but people aren't. Yay! All these people are loots.
Well, here's the thing. You know, here's the thing, Maurice. You know, if you don't have equal protection under the law, in other words, you don't have a safe neighborhood on the West or South Side, a safer neighborhood like I have in Streeterville or Amy has in Lakeview, although they're deteriorating too. But obviously, they're much safer than Lawndale or Inglewood, then you don't have equal justice under the law. So you would think that all these civil rights leaders would say, well, wait a second, these majority black neighborhoods in particular and some of the Latino wards too, they don't have the same protection. The law-abiding residents aren't enjoying the same safety. So how is that equal justice under the law? It's not. I'm making the argument on their behalf, but I'm a racist.
You are selling a Republican talking point right there.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, but the governor says I'm racist, so nobody's going to listen to me. All right. Maurice, thanks for the call. Frank, Arlington Heights.
I will break you.
Drago.
Yeah, that's Drago. Come on, that's beneath you. It's too easy. anybody can do that. Come on.
But I just heard it, so. But how is this a Republican form of government, too? I mean, you made the good argument on the 14th Amendment, the equal protection under law. How is this a Republican form of government? And why isn't there a federal judge out there admonishing Kim Fox and or removing her from office? They removed from office that county official in New Mexico because of his participation in the January 6th protests. So, why can't that be done here? I mean, she is clearly not living up to her duties of her office.
You know
what? Violating her oath of office.
You know what? I've said this on the show. I proposed this. I wish some candidates would take it up. Why don't we move to have a state law like they have in Florida and New York? A lot of attention to Ron DeSantis when he removed that prosecutor who announced, I'm not going to enforce the law, because there's a state statute that gives the governor that power in Florida. Well, there's also a state statute in New York that gives the governor of New York the same power. So you got a red state and a blue state, and the governor of each of those states enjoying that power to remove an elected official for cause if they violate their oath of office. And obviously, if you're a prosecutor, that would include announcing, I'm not going to enforce the law. We should have that same law here.
That would be
wonderful. We should. We should. We have an intellectual slug for a governor who would never enforce that law, who would never use that law to remove somebody from office. But if we did get Darren Bailey in there, or somebody else who would do, who's you know, more intellectually capable of doing something like that, that'd be a good law. But in the meantime, where's a federal judge to stop this carnage in our city and in these other cities throughout the country? Why isn't that happening? Because this is clearly not a Republican form of government. This is chaos. This is not the United States. This is not what our Constitution is all about. It's not the kind of government that we are guaranteed as American citizens. So,
hey, Frank, how's your Darren Bailey coming along?
Okay, well, I was working on it.
All right.
Here you go.
All right.
Hi, I'm Darren Bailey. Here we go. Hi, I'm Darren Bailey, and I'm running for governor of Illinois. We've had two governors in a row who are both billionaires. And how's that worked out for us? I'm a farmer. We fix things. We get up in the morning before the sun comes up. And we go to bed after the sun goes down. We fix things. We grow things. We solve problems. Elect me, a farmer, as your governor.
It's not bad.
You missed that. We feed the world.
That's not bad. It's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I just missed that part.
I don't know if you've got the physique to be a body double, but you could at least be a voice double. Yeah.
Perhaps. Well, let's get him elected governor. Then we could run some.
You can be the Dana Carvey to his George H.W. Bush. Yeah, exactly. Very good.
A thousand points a lot.
Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture, Frank. Frank, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. See Larry Elder, Brandon Tatum, Alex Berenson, and many more at Freedom Summit Chicago. Tickets available at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, Pastor Corey Brooks, and Project Hood's expansive programming benefits the Woodlawn and Inglewood neighborhoods on the South Side by promoting entrepreneurship and providing the support necessary to make those neighborhoods safer places. Join us in supporting Project Hood at their annual gala at Union Station. That's September 30th, the end of this month. For tickets, visit Project Hood. HOOD, projecthood.org. We're pleased to be joined now by the aforesaid Pastor Corey Brooks, senior pastor at New Beginnings Church, founder and CEO of Project Hood Communities Development Corp as well. And
he's a man who lived on the roof for, 6 months?
Yeah, we appreciate him coming down from the roof to talk to us. Project Hood has secured $18 million in cash, in-kind gifts, and signed pledges for this huge community center that is underway that includes a $5 million gift from Ken Griffin, $2 million from Related Midwest, $1.5 million from Wintrust, and all the required concrete for the structure donated by Ozinga Concrete as well. So
that's
corporate
awesome.
People, big, rich people, corporate people stepping up to help Corey and his endeavors on the South Side, and that's all very good. Corey, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dan, thanks. I appreciate it. Hi, Amy. How are you?
So give us sort of status of all the things you have underway and the impact you think you're having.
So our goal is still to build the center. We're going to be breaking ground on October 29th, our gala September 30th. We're raising as much money as we possibly can. We're upward of around $19 million now. The cost of the center is $35 million. And someone may ask, you know, why a center costs so much? Well, we have everything in it that deals with teaching people the trades, entrepreneurship, trauma counseling, sports, music, and arts. We have three restaurants. We have a Wintrust bank. We have an urgent care facility. So it's a place where we're going to really be helping people to transform their lives and giving them the opportunities that they're so desperately in need of. It's going to be a place that's going to bring a lot of transformation. A lot of families are going to be helped, and a lot of lives are going to be changed.
So who's going to implement this programming that you speak of? Who are some of your partners, or is that still in development?
Yes, so we have a great staff. We've gone from 3 people to 30 people on staff. We have a psychologist on staff. We have great business people on staff. So we have a great team. We also do collaborate. We do some violence prevention stuff with CRED. with the University of Chicago as well. As I said, urgent care, providing help and things of that, and Wintrust Bank providing financial services. Overweis Ice Cream, we have three franchises, Overweis Ice Cream, the Burger Joint, and Wood Grain Pizza that are going to be in the facility. So we're networking and collaborating with other organizations to make our facility one of the best on the south side of Chicago. Well, one of the best in Chicago, matter of fact.
How many square feet are we talking? Because it sounds like a little village.
Yeah, it's 89,000 square feet. It's a fabulous building, and it's gonna change just even the view and how it looks in our neighborhood. It's gonna be really amazing.
What are families in the neighborhoods that are going to be served saying about it?
Well, they're really excited. You know, we've had we've had a summer program this summer with about 150 kids, and they are all excited that they're going to be able to learn how to swim. That may not mean a lot to a lot of people, but when you don't have a swimming pool in your neighborhood and you never learn how to swim, parents and family are really excited about that. And then the opportunities that we're going to be able to afford families as it relates to all types of training, from the youngest to the oldest, they'll be able to come to our center and get the things that they need to help their families and help their lives.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long did you spend on the roof, and how much money did you generate by doing that?
So I'm still on the roof. I'm off today. I'm in Atlanta. I'm going to be speaking at the Family Research Center's conference led by Tony Perkins. And it's called Pray, Vote, and Stand Conference. So I'm off the roof today, but I've been on the roof for over 250 days. I'm going to be there till October 29th. Matter of fact, our last push, our last 40 days are going to be doing really hard from September the 20th to October 29th. So make arrangements to come visit us before it's over, and hopefully we can raise a lot more money before we get ready to break ground.
You should build yourself a little penthouse up there on the roof.
Well, he's got a... It's really
well. It's tenant, and you got to come. You have to come at least. You guys got to come at least for lunch before October 29th.
Okay. Sure, I'll do a lunch al fresco on the roof. Sure,
we'll bring the food, right? Yeah. We'll pick it up and bring it to you.
No, Corey knows where to get the food in the south.
Oh yeah, we got the food for you. If you can make it, we got the food.
Yeah,
but you don't
want
to come
to
the south side without eating a little south side food.
Absolutely.
Do your family members come up and visit you?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Consistently. And when I go on occasions like this, when I have to go on speaking engagements, my wife and family, they go with me as well. So we do get to still spend time, and they come up on the roof, and, you know, we have family time, and it is what it is. We realize we've been sacrificing. Living in our neighborhood is a big sacrifice. But we have to do what we have to do to get the center up.
Hey, so with respect to the center and the partnerships, you know, the corporate support is great. What about the relationship, if there is one, with the neighborhood schools? I mean, maybe not CPS, the Politburo, the central office, but the neighborhood schools, because it seems to me that if the neighborhood schools are failing, there's only so much a community center, even with all these services and amenities, can do.
Right. So two things. We have a tutoring program and mentoring program that we work with the schools in our neighborhood. And you are right. The schools in our neighborhood are absolutely failing for whatever reason. We have a 6% reading proficiency and a 4% math proficiency, which is failing.
Yeah.
And we try to provide tutoring service to help those kids to make it. We also have an alternative high school for 16 to 21 year olds. Most of them got kicked out of Chicago public schools for violent reasons. So we have an alternative high school for them. And at the center, our ultimate goal is to start a private Christian school for kindergarten through eighth grade for kids who come from single-parent households and live below the poverty line, because I really do feel that we have to do our part to make sure our kids are successful. So we're going to do our part, and it's very much needed. You cannot make it without education. It's just impossible.
Yeah, right. Also, something that was that I read in terms of the promo for your gala September 30th at Union Station, but promoting entrepreneurship. So that's really interesting. If you don't know Robert Blackwell, you should probably talk to him too, among others. But I like the idea of promoting entrepreneurship. So obviously the necessary foundation of reading and math skills, critical thinking skills, but then putting those skills to work in entrepreneurship. And getting, you know, black owned business, black business owners to involved in that, and also across, black, having black entrepreneurs that do business with white business owners too. I mean, that sort of all of that networking that needs to happen for any business owner, entry entrepreneur to be successful. I assume there's going to be that mentorship and that networking piece of it, particularly with some of the corporate partners you have.
Yeah. I know Robert Blackburn very well. He was on one of our advisory board members a few years ago.
Okay.
Our entrepreneurial school is going to consist of teaching people how to start businesses effectively, how to build capacity for those businesses. We're excited that Wintrust Bank is a major sponsor of our entrepreneurial school. And so it's going to give us the opportunity to teach anyone who's willing to go through the courses and also help them find capital to build capacity as far as their companies are concerned. So we're really excited about that, because one of the ways that we alleviate violence is to make sure that we have viable companies and people who are creating businesses and people who are creating jobs for our community. So that's one of the focal points of what we do.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's such an opportunity for your community center to be a bit of an incubator for entrepreneurship in those neighborhoods. And you've got job opportunities there, even with the restaurants. But then, you know, you've got some heavyweights involved. And so now you're putting Corey Brooks's community center, the New Beginnings Church Community Center, on the map. And so that becomes a brand that people are aware of and say, well, if somebody's been through, you know, the programs over at that community center, that I'm interested in them because I know that they're, you know, turning out kids that are ready to go.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that we're really excited about at the center is not just the entrepreneurship, but we're doing a collaboration with black students, black medical students from the University of Chicago, who are doing a clinic. So it's going to work good with our urgent care facility, and our clinic is going to be able to help people in the instances where they need something really quick, something really serious as far as medical attention, to give them the attention that they need. So we have a lot of great things going on, and we really believe it's going to transform our neighborhood. We already see that happening with the work that Project Hood is doing. The violence in our immediate area is down drastically. And we're going to continue to create a model that works not just on the south side of Chicago, but also works in other urban areas as well.
And what have you learned about yourself from living on the roof for all these months?
Well, I've learned that I'm a lot more tough than I thought, you know, and patient. Having to stay on the roof and having to endure the ups and downs of, you know, some nights being by yourself and trying to convince people to raise money and to convince people that this project is worth it sometimes can be real trying. But I've stayed with it. I'm going to stay with it. I'm going to tough it out. We're going to get this center built. And one thing I do know about me is that I love people. I love our community, and I want it to work. I'm tired of the violence on the south side of Chicago, especially in the area where we are. And I just don't want to keep talking about it, and I definitely don't want to keep waiting on government to come in and do something about it. I want to take the bull by the horns and change the trajectory of our community ourselves.
All right. He is Pastor Corey Brooks, Senior Pastor, New Beginnings Church of Chicago, founder and CEO of Project Hood Communities Development Corp as well. Project Hood's annual gala, the end of this month, September 30th at Union Station. For tickets or to support Project Hood more generally, Project Hood, H-O-O-D, projecthood.org. Corey Brooks, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you both.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Vice President Kamala Harris sat down with Chuck Todd on Sunday, that yapping terrier hosts Meet the Press, and range of topics. because Kamala, Reparation H, has so much to say on so many things.
Yeah, she's going to be here in Chicago today. First, she's doing a roundtable with Pritzkers and others about reproductive rights.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to have a big rally with all the Democratic candidates.
The depth and breadth of her knowledge is just awe-inspiring. This is what she had to say about the Supreme Court. And here we go again. The people saving our democracy, undermining the institutions that form the foundation of our representative republic, like, for example, the Supreme Court.
I think this is an activist court.
What does that mean?
It means that we had an established right for almost half a century, which is the right of women to make decisions about their own body as an extension of what we have decided to be the privacy rights to which all people are entitled.
Yeah.
Do we have those rights during COVID?
Well, we had a right that was created out of whole cloth by Justice Blackmun 50 years ago, and order was restored with Dobbs. So Kamala, and I often forget that she's a lawyer, former state attorney general, because it's sort of remarkable that she was. You know, it's sort of like when we had separate but equal for 50 years plus under Plessy v. Ferguson, that was overturned by Brown v. Board of Education. Did you have the same reaction to Brown that you did to Dobbs? So it's not the matter of the existence of something for 50 years. Bad law is bad law, and unfortunately, sometimes bad law lasts for a long time. Wouldn't you say, counselor? Yeah. Elena Kagan, she's a Supreme Court justice. She was at my alma mater, Northwestern, while she had Northwestern University School of Law. I went to Loyola for law school.
No.
I don't want to suggest I went to Northwestern.
No, that was your undergrad work.
Yeah. Yeah. When courts become extensions of the political process, when people see them as extensions of the political process, when people see them as trying to just impose personal preferences on society irrespective of the law, that's when there's a problem, and that's when there ought to be a problem. Boy, that's the profundity of Elena Kagan. Gee, I wonder what case she's talking about, obviously Dobbs. And so here we go again. You have now a Supreme Court justice calling the Dobbs decision a political one because she disagrees with the legal reasoning offered by the majority. We ever going to find the leaker of the draft opinion?
Right.
Anybody still care about that in terms of preserving the integrity of the court? Since justices across the spectrum were aghast at the leak, you would think there would be a lot more discussion when they're going to talk about things publicly about identifying that leaker and imposing some sort of accountability so that that would be discouraged from happening again. You know, speaking of things becoming politicized at the court, like leaking a draft opinion in order to ostensibly try to influence some justices to change their votes. And all this leads us to the Yeshiva University case. They got a reprieve initially, and then they didn't from the court in its entirety. Yeshiva University, you know, Orthodox Jewish institution, they did not want to grant official recognition to the Pride Alliance in accordance with New York City's human rights law. The school decided an official LGBTQ student club wouldn't be consistent with Torah values at the heart of its identity. And it's noted by Bill McGurn in his very good piece in the Wall Street Journal about this week. Yeshiva University isn't just any Jewish school. It's the flagship institution of modern Orthodoxy, committed to the idea that Jews can be at once fully Orthodox and fully engaged with the world. Well, Sotomayor initially granted a stay on the lower court's ruling, but in a 5-4 ruling against Yeshiva, the Supreme Court denied the request to put the New York County Supreme Court decision on pause, and the school will now need to go through the New York court system as it litigates its religious freedom against New York City's human rights law. Which brings us to our next guest, Helen Alvare. She is the Robert Levy Endowed Chair in Law and Liberty at the Antonin Scalia Law School at George Mason University. She's also the author of the new book, Religious Freedom After the Sexual Revolution, A Catholic Guide. Professor Alvare, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, religious freedom after the sexual revolution. I guess my question is, will religious freedom exist after the sexual revolution, not what form it will take, at least now, you know, 50 years removed from the sexual revolution? Because it seems to me what's happening, and I add to the discussion, Jack Phillips of Masterpiece Cake Shop back in court again, even after Supreme Court victory. It seems to me that what the left is doing is essentially making Christianity and Orthodox Judaism illegal through the back door, since they can't do it formally through the front door.
It's fascinating because it was many, many Democrats, to include President Clinton and Democrats in the Senate and the House in the 90s, who were so supportive of religious freedom, who gave us the most expansive protection for religious freedom at the Supreme Court. But since this growing obsession with sort of sexual expression as a individual right of making one's own identity, they've really pressured religious institutions of all kinds hugely, specifically in order to impose a particular sexual orthodoxy. And I wrote the book because I think that religious institutions, even though they're winning some of the time, could do a lot better than they're doing in expressing why we should support religious freedom and why our prescriptions for faithful, committed relationships, marital parenting, et cetera, are really good for people.
Well, and you've got the prospect of a congressional vote on codifying marriage redefinition as federal law coming after the midterms, of course, after the midterms. But so that's in the offing, and you can be sure there'll be some weak-kneed Republican defectors, whatever their position was pre-Obergefell. So, like you said, that we could be doing a lot better. I mean, I don't think there's a sense of urgency about the elimination of freedom of conscience that's occurring.
You know, I agree with you. I think we have taken religious freedom for granted as, you know, one of our great founding principles for so long. But now it's being put on sort of the other side of sexual expression rights. Religious folks are seen as, you know, looking for a right to discriminate against people, when what they're actually looking for is the ability of religious witness in a society that really needs this witness, whoever it comes from, to say it's a good thing to have marital commitment. It's a good thing to provide children stable moms and dads, you know, to know their family of origin. It's just amazing that we've seen this turnaround, but we're really being cast in the position of squashing rights when, frankly, what we're looking for is to promote the kind of values that give people, in a really practical sense, a sense of dignity, equality, freedom. And yet we're being cast as no to everything. And churches, I think, really have to realize that respect for religious freedom is no longer a given, and that respect for our teachings, not only on religious freedom, but on healthy sexual expression, they're going to rise and fall together. We have to speak about it in a positive and very confident way.
You recently did an interview with Professor Charles Camosi from Creighton, who we spoke with actually earlier this week. And he asked you whether or not you see a backlash coming in the direction of people, whether they're of a particular faith or not, recognizing the importance of freedom of conscience, sort of one of the earmarks of a free society. If you don't have it, you don't have a free society. So that backlash, and you said it's coming, but there's some qualifiers.
Yeah, I said yes, but, and I could have stopped there, but I did expand. I mean, yes, you're seeing lots of books come out from people who have lived through the last 50, 60 years of the sexual revolution, who are saying, oh my gosh, what happened to me? What happened to my kids? What happened to marriage? What happened to respect for life? And yes, we have that. But at the same time, when you consider the powers that be arrayed against this, the the media largely, the entertainment industry, the academy. Now you've got members of the Supreme Court themselves who are questioning the legitimacy of the court if it doesn't agree with them. Those are pretty powerful forces. But, I mean, we have to say, look at pro-life. It persisted and triumphed after 50 years of trying. And look at truth. People know in their own family lives what brings them a sense of peace and dignity and freedom in the long run. So, yeah, there's a backlash against the sexual revolution and its, you know, concomitant crushing of religious freedom right now. But the powers on the other side are big, which means the people on our side have to be as brave and confident and really knowledgeable. I wrote the book not just for religious institutions, but for ordinary people who are finding it really difficult to express themselves, both why religious freedom matters and why a healthy family life is good for themselves and for the country.
Well, the response since Dobbs can't be that surprising, as people that were commenting on the possibility of Roe being returned to the states.
No, it wasn't surprising,
right.
but I'm afraid.
So I just want to get your sense of the implications you see. You know, you knew there was going to be states that would go very different directions. So is that what we're going to be? We're going to be sort of a divided state, a divided United States of America based on really cultural and social mores, not just with respect to life, but also with respect to things like curriculum in schools. And as you were talking about, essentially the response to the sexual revolution, whether to further inculcate it or to sort of reset the table as states like Florida are doing.
You know, I want to comment that people ought not to be afraid of different patterns of laws in states. I mean, there's a lot of state law. Everything is not federal. Despite the fact that we have, you know, lots of federal legislation and regulation, since the beginning of the country, it's been the case that states oversee, have jurisdiction to pass laws on a wide variety of issues and have differed since the beginning. It's okay. We don't have to impose the values of one state on another. People are culturally different. They go to places where they feel comfortable in that legal and cultural environment. Sure, there's going to be a pattern of laws on this, like there are on virtually every other subject you can think about.
Mm-hmm.
It's pitting one state against another as if we're enemies of our own fellow Americans. That's really troubling. We're going to have to acknowledge that some states are going to have, you know, widespread abortion. I mean, California is just advertising itself. I don't know if you've seen the billboards, but it has the word California filled in with pictures, and we are an abortion state, and it has like beautiful flowers in the word abortion and greenery. Like, I mean,
they're recruiting people to get abortions in California.
It's disturbing to see. But there's also going to be states that are pro-life sanctuaries. And in every state, including California and others, there's thousands of pro-life, you know, voices and groups and citizens offering assistance to women and children. So we are going to have to live with that. But we live with that on every subject in the law.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know what's happening here, but our governor is giving out scholarships to nurses so that they can be trained to give abortions. And doctors in Illinois don't have to give abortions now. It's nurse practitioners can give abortions.
Right.
For an invasive procedure like that, that is very risky.
Yes, and what it is, the termination of human life. I have the same visceral reaction against that I did. I remember when Ireland passed its abortion referendum and people were shouting in the streets like it's a party. They've just forgotten what abortion is, and not only what it is in itself, but the situation it leaves the women in and the post-abortion distress that so many face. It's hard to watch, but we're going to see both sides of this unfold, and that's frankly what the Constitution at this moment permits.
Well, and maybe, again, here we have the founder's genius, because maybe the path to the salvation of religious conscience, freedom of conscience in 21st century America is federalism. You're going to have enough states. I mean, you know, you're going to more or less be split, and all those states that have their sort of Judeo-Christian values reflected in laws in these areas are going to fight for that freedom of conscience. Some states might fight less so, but that
divide across the nation will probably lead to stasis at the federal level, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I just, you know, again, I wrote the book to give not only heart, but to give facts and arguments and appealing ways for those who support, you know, protection of human life, stable, committed parents to their children, et cetera, for them to have the words and the empirical data. I'm a big believer in facts. I have myriad footnotes. Pro-lifers always are called on more to give reasons for what they say as if we're mistrusted. I wrote the book to give people the words to say that are kind, that are factual, and that are true.
She is Professor Helen Avare, Robert Levy Endowed Chair in Law and Liberty at Antonin Scalia Law School at George Mason University. The book that we've been discussing, Religious Freedom After the Sexual Revolution, A Catholic Guide. Professor Alvare, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic Friday. Call in now. Open mic Friday.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy taking your calls. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Comments, compliments, concerns, critiques, general crack pottery, we'll take it all. I begin this installment of Open Mic Friday with the news out of Canada that I know people are anxious to hear. Pretty serious business. The future of the Green Party in Canada is at stake. That's how serious this is. All right?
Okay.
Here's what happened.
What is going on? You're killing me. What is it?
There was a Zoom call to kick off the party's leadership contest. And the interim leader, Amita Kuttner, of course you know.
I'm so familiar with
her work. The interim leader of the Canadian Green Party,
Amita Kuttner. I mean, I'm really well-versed in that subject area.
I can't even use that.
What?
On a Zoom appearance.
Oh, no. Did she Jeffrey Toobin herself?
Kuttner identifies as non-binary and pansexual. She goes by the they-them pronouns. Although, I don't know how you...
How can you do that? No, you can't do they, them.
Here's the thing. On Zoom, during the call, to talk about the leadership of the Canadian Green Party.
You're killing me.
The caption under her pronouns she and L, not they and them.
I can't go on. I can't. I got to go home early.
They, meaning Kuttner, said, in moments like these, I wonder, how can I ensure other people's safety if I can't even ensure my own? So true.
God, who do these people think they are? I mean,
this will be forever known as the September 3rd incident. But it's reflective, as they said, Kuttner, reflective of a larger pattern of behaviors that a few in the party are perpetuating. What's the pronoun for a few? Can you call them they, too?
Them, they, yeah.
Mm. Wow. The September 3rd incident.
The incident? Come on.
Yeah.
An incident.
Green Party President Lorraine Reckmans, don't know the pronouns here, resigned over this.
Are you serious?
Well, obviously, it's unsafe. You can't be party to a party that's unsafe. Yeah.
I think we should just dismantle the whole thing.
The future of the Canadian Green Party hangs in the balance, as you can understand, based on the seriousness of the offense here. And I just thought people should know about this. I figure a lot of people follow the ups and downs of the Canadian Green Party, as it, is a fellow traveler to our Democrat Socialist Party and the eco-lunatics in this country here. They're our North American neighbors. Let's show a little consideration. Okay. All right. Wanted to make sure people are apprised of that. I know it's important.
Phew.
Did you have anything before we went to our callers?
I just wanted you to know that the queen has died.
Yes.
I'm thinking.
I'm thinking. In case you don't know, Queen Elizabeth II has died. Charles is now the king. And Quinn and Justin think that her body's not even in the coffin. I mean, people are waiting 14 hours. It's a 5-mile long line, and they actually halted it. No more people can get in line. And they think her body's not in there.
What do they have to gain from the body being in there?
Who's that? Okay. Is that God? God? Is that you?
No, it's Jessica Hosek.
Oh.
No, I don't, well, where do you think her body is?
Oh, it is in a freezer somewhere in London or
Royal freezer.
Out, yes, yeah, it precisely.
Nancy Pelosi size freezer.
With the corgis? The corgis in there?
No, the corgis she gave to Andrew, her son.
So, what if Prince Charles, to honor mom, actually became mom? What if he dressed up like a woman? I don't think that's beyond him. He's a dilettante. And just called himself Queen Elizabeth to extend the reign.
And Kamala could be king. I mean,
I don't want to be, you know, blasphemous, but I'm just asking.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, her tea bag.
Oh, boy.
No, the Queen's, we're talking about tea bagging. The Queen's tea bag sold for $12,000 on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
A used tea bag.
Hmm. Elton John's a collector, so he can afford it. Rick in Downers Grove, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Hey, there's nothing that gives you a bigger headache than talking about the royal family. But, hey, what I called about is, you know, like the story you said about the Green Party, trying to get into these people's heads and figuring out their thinking process. And I came to the conclusion it's got to be a chemical imbalance or a genetic defect. And somebody should look into that. However, there is a risk if you start to analyze these people. Take Jean-Pierre, for instance. You sit down with her, get into her head, try to figure out her thought process. 10 seconds into that, you're going to be huddled in the corner, laughing, crying, eating your own feces, because it's scary place in there.
Very graphic.
Somebody should look at it. I think it's worth the risk. And well, you guys have a safe weekend.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Terry in Rogers Park.
This is about Fox News Sunday. I wish the new host, Shannon Bream, wouldn't talk so fast.
We'll tell her. Yeah.
Okay. When she asked the question, I can't understand a word she says. And also, she was rude to a Republican politician not too long ago. And it reminded me how Chris Wallace treated Donald Trump, and I don't trust her.
Okay, Terry. Thanks for the call.
Serious stuff.
Yeah, send that over to...
Yeah, I'm on it right now.
Fox corporate there. Yeah. Kevin in Austin.
I want to thank all the conversation for helping me keep my diet this morning. I was thinking I'd have a nice breakfast, but I lost my appetite.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I want to give encouragement to all the fatalistic Republicans out there, like the guy who was on about an hour ago. I think there's an opportunity. I really believe there's an opportunity for Bailey to win. There are about three congressional seats that can flip if people who are fatalistic get involved. Go to the website, volunteer, see what you can do. I mean, Dan, you've had experience with this. Is, you know, what can people do who are listening to this?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the call, Kevin. Look, it's the simplest thing I say in your where you live and operate, the people that you know, don't be no, there's no chance, throw up your hands. You know, fatalism is contagious, as is as optimism. And there is a path. It's an underdog race. These are all underdog races because of Illinois. But the combination of what has happened to the country, so what the conditions are nationally and how they're influencing how people live, including in Illinois, some of the issues that have broken through now, particularly the crime issue, which is very visceral, very emotional, there's an opportunity to hold somebody who's not wildly popular. I mean, his numbers aren't as bad as Lori Lightfoot's, who's completely upside down.
Yeah,
but J.B. Pritzker's not some indomitable figure. He was basically handed the governorship because of Bruce Rauner's perfidy and political mistakes. So, yes, it's doable in this year, and people should be working and talking like it is doable. Focus on the questions that we're presenting that should inform people's vote, that should frame the election, and you're going to find that a majority agree with you. Now you just have to get them over their issues with Trump or, abortion or, I don't like Republicans or whatever, and say, you know, on sort of fundamental issues that really drive my quality of life and the opportunities I have in my life and for my family and their lives here, where are things? Where do they stand? You've got Democrats, socialists in charge of everything, and barring something really shocking, you're going to have Democrat socialist control of the General Assembly. So don't you want any balance in your government? You think Democrat domination of all the constitutional offices, of all the offices in Cook County and the city, in addition to the General Assembly, in addition to the Supreme Court, has that produced a state that is very attractive to live in? These public policies, are they improving your quality of life, do you think? Improving your financial prospects, making you feel like you're safe where you live? If not, then, you know, make at least one important change to provide some balance, even if it's something you otherwise wouldn't be inclined to do in better times. These aren't better times. That's what I would say. Bob, Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Thanks for taking the call. Yet another good week of discussions. Oh, by the way, I got a message that the oldest queen now is Elton John.
Hi-oh.
Hey, Bob waving the funnies, huh?
That's engineer's humor there. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Here's what I want to discuss. I missed you guys last night. I attended the Jeannie Ives Breakthrough Ideas meeting where education was discussed with Ted Dombrowski, Terry Schilling, and Franklin McCormick. I think you had I know you had Ted Dombrowski on your program. For 1.5 hours, they discussed the sorry state of education in Illinois. And I wonder how many Illinoisans are aware of all the problems in education that we have. I noticed in the audience was a lot older, and probably very few of the attendees had children in schools, but probably many of them had grandparents. So I wonder if Darren Bailey is going to discuss education in his campaign and all the troubles that we have here in Illinois with the sorry state. It was just amazing, the numbers.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Yeah, well, the parents of kids actually in school are busy driving them around from practice to practice and weekday evenings. But, I think more and more parents per COVID are paying more attention. And you're going to hear a lot about K-12 in Illinois in the closing weeks of the campaign. I can guarantee you that. Mary Midway.
Oh, hi. I guess this goes under compliments, although I listen to you so much, there are times when I'm like, oh, no wonder Dan Frost is single. But when
yeah,
you...
I get that a lot.
No, I mean, but now you're going to regret it because you have points in perpetuity with me now.
Oh,
because
I do.
Whether you like it or not, that ad Sunday during the football game, you really walked the walk on that. I mean, you had to take heat from, you know, who throws a lot of heat. I mean, I was thinking, not that anybody ever thought you were just collecting a paycheck. No. But I'm just saying, that was right up there, like how Sean moved to Florida. I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
Okay, thanks for the call, Mary.
I think she's kind of flirting with you.
Appreciate it. Brad on 290.
How you doing, everybody? My name is Brad Sandifer. I'm actually running to be sheriff of Cook County, and I want to change all this crime, and I want to stop this illegal immigration that was mentioned on the news earlier. The Democrats want to complain about sending illegal immigrants to their area, but they're encouraging them to come as long as they stay in Texas and Arizona. That doesn't seem right to me.
Okay.
And
Brad, what's your full name? People get information about your candidacy for Cook County Sheriff, run against Tim Dart.
Yeah, I am running against Tom Dart. My name is Brad
Tom Dart.
Sandifer.
Tim Dart.
You can find out about me at bradforsheriff.org.
Bradforsheriff.org. Okay, thanks, Brad. Brad Sandifer at Tim's his lobbyist brother, but whatever. 601, honestly. Leo in Wicker Park.
Yeah, hi. I know Texas wants to offer opportunity to American citizens. I think Chicago, New York, and Washington should comply and offer $100 and a free bus ride to homeless, and maybe even conditional early release for prisoners, and put them on buses and send them down there. They're American citizens, and they're looking for a new life.
Yeah, oh, okay. I guess the difference is Texas and Florida aren't advertising their interest in convicted felons from Illinois. I guess that's the difference, isn't it, Leo? Nice try, though. Dan, Southwest Side.
Hey, sorry, I got to remove the Queen's tea bag from my eyelids. I just want to say I'm born and bred in Illinois in the south side of Chicago. Went to U of I in Northwestern with medical degrees and fellowships. The title of my salutatorian speech, you'll like this, Dan, was, in fact, huddled in the corner eating feces.
Is that right? That's odd. It's weird. That's weird. What are the odds? It's no way to go through life. That's what I always say. Larry in Elmhurst.
Hey, good morning. Hey, Dan, I seen that commercial on a cable station the other night. But my point is our property tax should go down considerably now that we have to police ourselves. And I'm actually taking applications for patrols on my property right now. You won't be paid in currency, but I have a refrigerator full of beer, and you are allowed to smoke weed on my property.
Oh, good to know. Larry and Elmer says, put the party house. Thanks for the call, Larry. Appreciate it. John, Bridgeport.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Hey, listen, you guys, for that lady that likes you to compare what you did with what Sean did, no way. You're, like, still fighting with that commercial. It was excellent. Oh, my gosh. And Sean just moved to Florida. Like, he, like, gave up the ghost. So, I mean, come on. You're, like, way up there on the charts of being great. He's just kind of, hanging in.
Completely agree, John. Thanks for the call. Completely agree. Right on the mark. Mike in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Pretty close.
Good morning, folks. I just wanted to let everyone know that my band September 3rd Incident is playing in Milwaukee this weekend.
That's a great tribute to thanks for calling. Great tribute to what is left of the Green Party of Canada. Appreciate that. It's inspired. September 3rd Incident. We have J6. They have the September 3rd Incident. Chuck and Delavan.
Chuck.
Speaking of bands, I just had a flashback from my best high school band I was in. It was called Maureen from St. Charles. Hey, they got a big hoedown around town. First time ever, they got a honky-tonk festival up here in Lake Geneva. They're bringing in a bunch of white trash bands from Nashville. It starts today. They got a craft brew fest if you want to come up. You got free beer tasting. And then Sunday, if you want to see me and my girlfriend dance, and we'll be over at the Doosterbeck's Brewery over at Elkhorn. It'll be a lot of fun. The poor women over there, though, when they bring their babies, they can't smell the dirty diapers because of the pig farm next door. They don't know when to change them. So there'll be a lot of diaper rash this weekend.
Hey,
you guys have a great time.
Chuck, thanks for the call. And I got to tell you, Maureen from St. Charles, I remember you guys did a great cover of Danny Wilson's Mary's Prayer. Fantastic. Yeah, Maureen from St. Charles, one of my favorite tribute bands. Thanks, Chuck.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosy. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.